So a good morning to everyone. What I'd like to speak about today is hearing the voice of God, even in 2021, and I'll explain what I mean. I always find it very disheartening, not to mention very bothersome, that when it comes to certain manifestations of holidays and mitzvot that we do, we seem to be continuing to do it the way we've always done it, without being sensitive to the fact that the reality has changed around us. Namely, there's a notion out there saying the following. If this is the way my grandfather did X and my father did X, then I'm going to do X regardless of the fact that around me, things have changed. Just to take it to its logical conclusions, if my grandfather lived in Poland and they celebrated 2 days of Yontif, and my parents lived in America and they celebrated 2 days of Yontif, then even though I'm living in Israel, I'll still celebrate 2 days of Yontif because the holy Mesorah, the holy tradition of generations dictates that we don't change anything. Now, I find that to be very bothersome on so many levels, so many levels. But before I get into why I find it bothersome on so many levels, I'd like to pinpoint today two things. Number one, when reality changes, we have to take the eternal rules of the Torah and plug it into the new reality. That's been done throughout the generations, and that is the tradition. Namely, the rules and the regulations of the Torah don't change, but its manifestation obviously will change based on the reality around us. And once we get through that general introduction, I'd like to posit how this relates to Hanukkah candles that we're going to start lighting on Sunday night. Namely, if indeed the Hanukkah candles that we're about to light Sunday night, we're going to fulfill that mitzvah in a different way because reality has changed. So let's begin. Number one, has the Torah changed? We all know that the Torah in and of itself doesn't change. After all, the Rambam says there is 13 fundamentals of faith, and on the right side of the screen you can see that number 9 of his 13 fundamentals of faith, written in his Perush to the Mishnah in Sanhedrin. We all know the Rambam was a great, prolific author. One of the things he authored was the Perush to the Mishnah. And he says that what is the 9th of the 13 fundamentals of faith? She tozo Torat Moshe lo tevatel. The Torah of Moshe will never be nullified. Ve'lo tavo Torah me'et Hashem zulata. There'll never be a new Torah from God. There won't be a situation one day, Avi, that God's going to wake you up and say, hey, I changed the rules. Zman Kriyat Shema now is at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. You can go back to sleep. That won't happen. The Torah will not change, and there won't be a new Torah that will come along. Ve'lo yitvasfes ba, ve'lo yigara mimeno. And there won't be anything taken out of it, and there won't be anything added to it. So from the time that Moshe got the Torah, wrote it down word for word, letter for letter from God, the Torah doesn't change. And indeed, just like God doesn't change, Ki ani Hashem lo shaniti, says the Pasuk in Malachi, indeed the Torah doesn't change. The Torah is a manifestation of who God is, and the Torah doesn't change. However, its manifestation, the way we fulfill it, will obviously change based on the changing reality around us. So let's see a few examples of that, because you may say, wow, we always thought Grunstein was an Orthodox Jew. Look at this, he's a Reformed Jew. He's telling us the Torah has changed. Let's see. The Shulchan Aruch Paskins, Ein Shoalim B'Shlomi Shaklal, Afilu Ayedei Shaliach V'Afilu Ayedei Ba'ala. Have you ever gone up to anyone, Rabbi? What do you mean you don't see it on the notes? It's on the left side, top of the screen.
We only have one page, but your opening page.
You only have my opening page. Wow. Let's begin again. I'll do a share screen. We'll see if this works. Do you see it now?
Yep, now we do.
Okay. So, if you look on the orange part, it says, Ein sho alim b'shlomi shaklal, afilu al yedei shaliach, afilu al yedei ba'ala, lishloach la divrei shilumim. Have you ever, Rabbi Lewis, have you ever been in a situation where you met someone, you say, how's your wife? Yeah, you've done that? right? What do we call that in Jewish? Being a gentleman? Yeah. You know what the Shulchan Aruch says? You're an absolute sinner. You're not allowed to ask someone how his wife is doing. Ein shalim b'shloma isha klal. You don't ask her how she's doing. Not even via her husband. Comes along the Ramah and says, v'yesh omrim, and some say, d'chol zeh, she'ino seh derech chiba. Rak kavanato l'shem shamayim mutar. But some say that this is only if you're doing it in order to romantically and intimately get close to that woman. But if you're just being what we call a gentleman, if you're just what we call exchanging salutations, says the Ramah, this is no longer applicable. And therefore he says, l'chein nahagu, and therefore the custom in Krakow in the 16th century, l'hakel b'harchakot elu. So change number one, we do say, how are you to women? Yes, Bruce. First of all, they do ask her name. That's a new thing today in certain circles of the Orthodox world that they don't mention women's names. If you want to go with that, Bruce, you cannot read Sefer Bereshit. You have to never come to shul for the whole duration of Sefer Bereshit because you have the names Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Leah, Chava, all in there. Okay? It's amazing to me how this has crept into Judaism. So if that chumrah is correct, you can forget about coming to shul. They said, Ayei Sarah Ishtecha. But you are correct. They did ask, where is Sarah, your wife? What they didn't do, Bruce, is say, how is she? Right? Okay. So that answer your question? There's a better answer to your question. You know what that answer is?
Question.
Before your question, Irving. Bruce, what's the better answer to your question?
Well, they're angels. They can do what they want.
They're angels, or before Matan Torah. Before Matan Torah.
Right.
Irving? Okay. Second example, the Shulchan Aruch again, Paskins. I'm not giving you something obscure from the Gemara. This is Shulchan Aruch, Code of Jewish Law. Okay? We mentioned that he says not to say, how's your wife, even to the husband. Now, however, Markulis, if you see an Avodah Zarah called Markulis, our Chachamim, our sages, made a bracha. What's the bracha that they enacted? Omer, Baruch, something, 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 La Ovrei Ritzono. If you see a place that was a Markulis, this is what you say. Says the Ramah, V'ha'idnan today, Ein Mevarchim Zot HaBracha. We do not mention and nor do we bless this bracha. Shaharei, due respect, when you used to see a Markulis, a Jew would start to sitter. Can anyone translate sitter? I can't say that in English. Do you know what sitter means? It doesn't mean shake. It means like shivering and shaking out of fear. When you used to see an Avodah Zarah, it was like Bruce, they all of a sudden told you what you just ate was bacon. A Jew has a certain, I would say, natural disgust from things that the Torah said not to eat. Amongst the list, the top of the list is pig. So if you found out that on your plate is pig, I'm pretty sure you would shake. You would shiver. So when you used to see Avodah Zarah, it would be a day where you would shake for 2 hours. Says the Roma, I'm living over here in Poland. In Europe, we see churches everywhere. We see if that indeed is Avodah Zarah. Or forget about that, we see real Avodah Zarah. So to see the Markulis won't make me go for the oxygen pump. And therefore, we don't make this bracha. Change number two. Change number three, which is probably the change of all changes. Because you may say, just to fill in Svi who joined us, you know, due respect, Rabbi. Due respect, when you say the Torah changed with regard to saying hello to a woman, how are you? What is that, a derabanan minus? And when you say we no longer make a bracha, you know, we don't make many brachas today. How many people do you know make a shehechiyonu when they buy a new suit? It's a halacha in Shulchan Aruch. How many people do you know make a shehechiyonu when they didn't see a friend for 30 days? I'm probably the only idiot around that does it. But, quite frankly, we don't make many brachas, so this is not going to make me go for the oxygen pipe that the Torah changed. But the next example will. There is a pasuk in the Torah that says that you all have to write or own, commission a sofer, to write you a Sefer Torah. How many people here have a personal Sefer Torah? How many? It's a pasuk in the Torah. Ve'ata kitfu lachem et hashira hazot. Just to make sure I'm not taking a pasuk of the Torah out of context, the Rambam in his list of mitzvot, mitzvah number 18, hu shitzivanu, shiyeh lekol ish mimeno Sefer Torah le'atzmo. Every Jew has to have his own Sefer Torah. And just in case you say, well, I can't write it, I'm not a sofer. V'imi yifshar lo lichtavo, you don't know how to write it, says the Rambam. Tzarich sheyikneu, o yiskor mi shichtaveu lo, commission a sofer and write it. How many people here, we never fulfilled this mitzvah? How come? Yes, Bruce. You're on mute.
Yeah, might you say we don't paskin from the Torah directly?
We don't paskin from the Torah directly.
We don't
paskin from the Torah. The Torah is like one of the dayot. Okay, it says lo tirtzach in the Seret HaDibro. That's just one day. Maybe there's like a contrary. I hope you're not serious.
No, because we use the Torah show up to how it's interpreted.
Okay, so here's an example. We have a pasuk in the Torah, and the Torah Shebaal Peh, which the Rambam summarizes for us, because that's what he did in his Mishneh Torah. He summarized the oral Torah, says explicitly, Blues, this is a positive commandment. No more, no less. The positive commandment, Shiyeh lekol ish mimenu sefer Torah le'atzmo.
What about buying fur?
So comes along Harold and says, I don't understand. I'm living in Efrat. Okay, not every Jew in Efrat cares so much about Judaism, but basic tenets of Orthodox Judaism they care about. The Torah Judaism is something that's on their agenda. Are you telling me every single person in this city is not Nikayim a positive commandment of the Torah? That's like saying every single person in this city doesn't put on tefillin. So comes along the Rosh, quoted by the Tur here on the source sheet, and says the following. The Tur was the son of the Rosh, so he quotes his father. And he says, Adoni Avi Haroz Zal says, that this pasuk is obviously a pasuk in the Torah. Obviously it's obligatory. Albeit, Harold, its manifestation changed. How? Shezelo ne'emar el ledorot harishonim. She'ayu kotvim sefer Torah velomdim ba. There used to be a situation where you had a personal sefer Torah. And on Shabbos afternoon, when you're bored, you would take it out and learn from it. Avala idno, but now I'm the Rosh. I'm living over here in the Middle Ages in Germany and then Spain. Shekotvim sefer Torah uminichim oto beveit haKnesset likrot bahem barabim. What is the only thing you use a sefer Torah for today? Okay, Judaism 101. If you have to tell someone who's a proselyte, a ger, a newcomer to Judaism, what do you use a Sefer Torah for? What would you tell them?
To read in the synagogue.
So says the Rosh, the whole reason for this mitzvah, which is, and I quote, Ve'ata, with an ayin, kitfu lachem et hashira hazot, you shall write down the Sefer Torah for yourself, Vilamidai b'nei Yisrael, and learn from it. It's not Mikoyim, because we don't learn from a Sefer Torah. All we do is read from a Sefer Torah. Says the Rosh, with greatest respect to this old manifestation of this mitzvah, today in the Middle Ages, how do we Mikoyim the mitzvah of Ktivat Sefer Torah? That doesn't change. The manifestation will change. What does the Rosh say? Mitzvah taseh al kol Yisrael asher yado maseget. Lichtov chumshei haTorah, u'mishneh v'gemara, mefurash u'firushehen lahagot bahem hu uvanav. And just in case you think he pulled one over you, he explains, Mitzvat Ktivat HaTorah Ukedei Lilmod Ba. Comes along the Rosh and says, you know, usually the Torah doesn't give us reasons for mitzvot, but this is one of those very, very unique, and I would even say rare examples where the Torah actually tells us the reason. The reason for this mitzvah is not to own a Sefer Torah per se, but rather to learn from it. So therefore, says the Rosh, if indeed you are going to learn from a Sefer Torah, then buy a Sefer Torah and learn from it. But since that's not what we do today, we only read from it in shul, the way to mekayim this mitzvah is to have what's behind me over here, and that is a library. So therefore, to sum up, gentlemen, a biblical manifestation of a mitzvah changed, a rabbinic bracha is no longer said, and yes, we all exchange salutations to women, or at the very least, via their husband, because the Torah indeed is eternal. But the manifestation, the way we actually fulfill it, will change based on the changing reality around us. And you have to be with the head open, as well as eyes open, and use your five senses to say, did the reality change? Okay, now let's go back to the Psukim of the Torah, and the Torah Shebaal Peh that Bruce mentioned, and see how it relates to the new reality. Okay, Bruce, question.
Some of these things easily enough, or maybe with some effort, but we don't really, we look at geopolitical things and we just decide.
Bruce, I think you're talking about something totally different, and that is if you want to annul or eradicate a rabbinic commandment, such as taking medicine on Shabbos, kidney oath, am I correct?
No, I'm referring to declaring a new moon. Things that
declaring a new moon. Okay, we don't have the criteria in place right now to do it.
We could set in process. We just choose not to.
That's not exactly correct. We don't necessarily have it in process because we don't have a Sanhedrin sitting on Lishkat HaGazit right now.
We can choose to set up or choose not to.
Oh, so Bruce sits in Efrat and chooses to do it?
Well, the leaders, the Jewish leadership has chosen to ignore the opportunity to create.
Oh, the Jewish leadership has chosen to ignore the opportunity.
Yeah, the rabbinic leadership.
I have to defend the Jewish leadership, who I don't know who you're referring to, but Bruce, I will promise you one thing. Rabbis who care about Judaism, as well as Jews who care about Judaism, I don't believe are sitting around saying, you know, let's ignore Kiddush HaChodesh and forget about it because it's too much trouble. We like the calendar. I don't think that's what they're doing. But I believe what they're doing, you think they are. So allow me to defend them and say that I don't believe that they're ignoring it. I believe that they're looking at reality and saying, we can't do it as of yet. For good reasons. Not bad reasons, not easy reasons, good reasons. Okay, not convenience, good reasons. That's not, I believe, the situation.
Afraid, the way that some of the Rabbanim are afraid to come out and say certain things, like they'll say it privately, they say, don't quote me on it, and they're afraid where change will head to. They're afraid that it will be a runaway train.
So you just mentioned two things, Avi, that I think are very important. Anytime we're going to deal with, do we going to change the way that we acted? Number one, rabbis scared to say what they really think. I found that to be very problematic. If you look at the introduction of Rav Moshe Feinstein to his Igrot Moshe, he explains that if a rabbi believes that the halacha is the halacha, he has an obligation to say so. And if he doesn't, then maybe all the Jewish people are making a mistake. Obviously, a rabbi also has to be a little humble and say, well, if all the rabbis disagree with me, maybe I'm wrong. But the second point you mentioned is also a very legitimate point, and that is what we colloquially call the slippery slope. If we change this, who knows where we're going to get to. Correct? But, having said that, taking those two things into consideration, we see here three examples where things have changed. And the world did not come to an end. So I'd like to take these three examples and plug it into the holiday we're about to celebrate this Sunday night. And that is to see if indeed the way we light Hanukkah candles today should change, because the reality has changed. What's the one thing that changed in terms of Hanukkah? You know what? I'm in a good mood today. Two things that changed. Let's start with the simple thing. What's the first thing that changed from 150 years ago?
Where we light.
Where we light, correct? Today, at least in Israel, maybe around the world in certain places, you can safely light the menorah outside, as was the original and preferable way of doing it. If you can't light it at your door, then at least at your window. In most places in the world, it's not a sha'at sakana, where you have to close the shutters, and thus, persume nisa, publicizing the miracle, will only be for the people of your household. So that's the first change that happened today. Baruch Hashem, we're in that situation. What's the second change that happened? Say again, Bruce?
Maybe women lighting, or
no, I don't think that's a change. That's just the way we understand the halacha. Do one person light per house? Do women light even though their husband's lighting? That's just the way we understand the halacha. That didn't change in reality. Talking about reality.
We have a Medina that we didn't have 50 years ago.
That's correct, Harold. But how does that affect the way we light Hanukkah candles, that we have a state? Not sure it does. But it's safe. Yes, that's the first point. That's part of the safety. There's a second big difference, gentlemen. The Gemara says you're supposed to light Hanukkah candles al chetichle regel min hashuk, until the people are no longer in the marketplace. What time is that today?
Very late.
Well, if you want to take it literally, it's very, very late, correct? That changed. So the question is the way we light Hanukkah candles supposed to change now based on the fact that that changed? What do you mean, Tzvi?
The halacha stated, Achitichle regel min hashuk. Achitichle regel min hashuk could be 6 o'clock in one area, midnight in another area.
So we're going to get to what Tzvi just said, and that is, we're going to have to analyze what those words mean. Does it mean literally to the last person's in the marketplace? Or does it just mean, it means 6 o'clock? But the Chachamim didn't say 6 o'clock. They used different language to say 6 o'clock. For example, what's the opening Mishnah of the entire Torah Sheba'al Peh? It says there you're supposed to reach Kriyat Shema when? Does it say 8 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 20 minutes after Shkia? What does it say? B'sha'ah sha'kohanim nechnesim le'echol b'trumatan. Everyone there agrees it does not mean that you have to ask the Kohen, listen, send me a WhatsApp when you're about to eat truma. Correct? What does it mean there? It means whatever it means. 20 minutes after Shkia, 18 minutes after Shkia, Shkia itself. They had a way of talking. That's what it means. We'll have to analyze that. But first, we have to acknowledge, before dealing with this question, that the reality on that level did change. Namely, because of the invention of electricity, people are out and about far later than once upon a time. So, based on that, let's see, first of all, if indeed you put, I don't know, enough oil in there for 4 hours, you light at 5 o'clock in the afternoon when it gets dark, and you leave it in there for 4 hours straight, is there any kiyum whatsoever, or is it a waste of oil? Let's see. Number one, we have to deal with this with the first source, and that is there any sanctity to the candles after that famous half an hour?
You never answered my question.
I didn't even hear your question, Irving. That's why I didn't answer it.
Yeah, the thing that they have in the olden times, women were never spoken about. They couldn't speak to anybody else but their husband. Today, all people can talk, and even in the olden times, from mayor's wife, she knew the whole. The whole Torah. So there are occasions when they had
Irving is indeed quoting the Ramah that we quoted at the beginning of this year, that since the reality changed, that halacha changed as well. You're correct. Getting into Hanukkah, there is a halacha in Shulchan Aruch that after you light the Hanukkah candles, you're supposed to say, Hanerot Halalu Anu Madlikin. And that's not just a nice song. It's based on Masechet Sofrim that I mentioned here. That's part of the ritual of lighting Hanukkah candles. Maos Tzur is nice. You don't have to say it. But Hanerot Halalu is part and parcel of the ritual of lighting Hanukkah candles. In the Hanerot Halalu, it also brings a few of the halachos of Hanukkah candles. The most famous, the Ein Lanu Reshut Lishtamesh Bahen Ela Lirotam Bilvad. Does anyone want to translate what that means practically for us?
We're not supposed to use them at all.
We're not supposed to use them to read by them, to count money by them, but rather what?
Just to look at.
Just to look at them. Okay. Unlike what candles? Unlike which candles before Irving's question? Shabbat candles are there dafka to illuminate. Exactly. Yes, Irving.
Okay. You know, first of all, Hanukkah candles are not in the derision. People do it because they want to do it. But if they want to, they don't have to do it.
That's not true, Irving. And I don't know why every time we have a shiur you mention that, and I always try to correct you. That's not true. If you want to do it, you can. That's not correct at all. If the sages, it's not the Oraisa, that part of what you said is correct. Well, first of all, what you just said, that it's not the Oraisa, is correct. It's the Rabbanim. But the rabbis have a right to enact mitzvot. And the Gemara asked, so how come I have to listen to them? And it brings two psukim in the Torah that basically obligate you and me to listen to the sages. So it's not that if you feel like it, you do it, and if you don't feel like it, you don't. But rather, God said you must listen to the sages, and the sages said for these 8 days, we have to light candles and say challah. Okay, based on, it is the Rabbanon, but you have to listen to the rabbis, you and I. Okay, based on that, gentlemen, if I put a lot of oil in there, and a half an hour that Tzvi mentioned, I think Tzvi said 6 o'clock, but I think it's about 5:30 today. If at 5:33 it's still lighting, can I now go up to it and count my money with it? Can I go up to it and see what time it is with its candle, says the Tur, and I quote, V'im natan bayoter yachol lechabot l'achar she'avor zeh hazman, v'chei yachol l'ishtamesh l'ora l'achar zeh hazman. Not only can you use the candles, you can blow them out. Blow them out. So, case scenario. Tzvi, since your microphone is on, are you going to be invited to your kids for a Hanukkah party some night or another? You're going to give them Hanukkah gelt? You're going to give them presents if they're nice to you?
It will probably be by me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but wait. Other examples, plus you have to catch a flight.
Exactly. You have to catch a flight. You have to go out. You don't want to leave fire in your house. The minute the half an hour is over, blow out the candle, says the Torah. There's no kiyum after that half an hour. None. You can blow it out, and if you want to leave it lit, you can start counting your money with it. Only for the half an hour you can't. However, if this is true, then how does this mistader with another halacha that the Rosh brings in the name of the She'iltot, which is a Geonic source? Says the Rosh, what happens in Hanukkah after day one where you have leftover oil? What are you supposed to do with it? Use it on day two. And then if you have leftover oil on day two, you use it on day three, etc. Until you get to day eight. Day eight, Sunday night, week, you go ahead and light it. And you have leftover. What are you supposed to do now?
Save it.
Save it for next year? Not a bad idea. Says the She'iltot, another idea. Burn it. Make sure you burn it so nobody benefits from it. Well, we just said that after the half an hour, you can benefit from it. So how come you have to burn it on the eighth day? If the half an hour is long over. Pardon?
Is that truma oil?
What?
Truma oil.
We'll get truma oil as a separate issue of mitzvah to lisrofuta. Here it's Hanukkah oil. If indeed there's no Kedusha after the half an hour, half time you have to burn it. So there's two answers to this. The first answer is the Shulchan Aruch, who basically says the only oil you have to burn is the oil within that half an hour that for some reason or another didn't get burned up. You know, sometimes you light the Hanukkah candles and the comes along the wind and bye-bye fire. So that enough oil, that you have to burn. But over the half an hour, you don't have to. That's what the Rosh says. The Maria Buav, a little more machmir, he comes and says, no, if you put it in there without saying, I only want to mekayim the mitzvah of half an hour, and whatever's left over, you do have to burn. So at least according to the Maria Buav, there is Kedusha, there is sanctity to the leftover oil. If you didn't specify, you just want to light for the half an hour. According to the Shulchan Aruch, no Kedusha whatsoever. So that's issue number one we have to deal with. So if you want to put in extra oil, no harm. The question is there a Kiyum Mitzvah? Says the Shulchan Aruch, none. Says the Maria Buav, if you said nothing and just put it in there. Or if I can be more practical today, how many of you buy the oils that are ready with the wick in there and you just, you know, stick it in, there you go. So those have more than half an hour. You don't specify nothing, you just put it into your menorah. Then, indeed, there has Kedusha. Second issue, is there any fulfillment to light longer than the half an hour? So we put in a lot of oil. So is there any fulfillment, says the Mogen Abraham Gornisht. And mitzvah b'nerot arukot. The halachar shedalku keshira zeh mutar lishtamesh b'en. Ve'en shayachid ur mitzvah l'pshat ha-mitzvah. You can't get more clear than that. The Mogen Abraham says, absolutely no kiyum mitzvah after the half an hour. Nothing. You're wasting oil. You want to waste money? You can waste money. But there's no kiyum mitzvah. Yes, Harold.
Would it make a difference if you like it? Some people light before Shkia and some people wait to say something for cover?
So first of all, I hope no one lights before Shkia except for Sha'at HaTchak.
Right after Shkia.
At Shkia, and obviously it's more than half an hour. It has to be at least a half an hour after Tzeita Kochavim. So if you're lighting at Shkia, you have to add in at least another 18 minutes to that. So it would be 48 minutes. Correct. But after 48 minutes, says the Magen Avraham, a Gornish, there's no Kiyum. As a matter of fact, of Yosef Engel in his Gilyonei HaShas, comes along and says, maybe we have to come along and say, you must put it out, because if not, what are you doing? You're having hana'ah from a mitzvah. So maybe after the half an hour, you must blow it out. Very interesting, I would even say radical point of view. But for our purposes, the Magen Avraham says, no kiyum. Let's just finish this, Bruce. The Mishnah Brura says, no kiyum in oil, but there is a kiyum in candles. I don't understand his point of view. I really don't. From an aesthetic point of view, I understand. Aesthetics means if you buy a candle that's going to light for an hour and you cut it, it looks yuck. So maybe you should just leave the big candle. But I don't understand it in terms of halacha. I really don't. I throw it out there. If someone can explain, if there is a kiyum mitzvah after the half an hour, then how come with candles yes and with shemen not? The Maria Buav we already mentioned. If you just put it in without saying anything, there is a kiyum mitzvah. And finally, the Yabetz, Rav Yaakov Emden, who liked to fight with everyone, he comes along and says, yes, if you put in too much oil, it has Kedusha, and if it continues to light for an hour and a half, it has Kedusha, just like in a sukkah. Atzei sukkah asurin, afilu yoter mehechsher sukkah. No one came along in a sukkah and said, well, a minimal sukkah is Zayin al Zayin. Zayin al Zayin tfachim. Well, if you have a sukkah that's bigger, and most of you do, then the other parts of the sukkah are not, you know, function to this law of you can't have hanah from it, this, that, the other thing. Gornished, it's not subject to those laws. Obviously, the whole sukkah is one entity. So the whole candle is one entity. And therefore says the Shilat Yabetz, Rav Yaakov Emden, that if indeed you put in enough oil, more oil than a half an hour, it has Kedusha. And indeed, the Eliyahu Rabbah seems to agree. So 4 points of view. No kiyum whatsoever, only kiyum with candles. A kiyum if you said nothing. Or a full kiyum, just like a sukkah that's too big. Yes, questions?
If you use the pre-cups, the pre-port, I have in mind, trying to use whatever's used. I don't have in mind. I don't want whatever's left over. Whatever's left over, I already know.
So the Ma'ari Abuav would say it has Kedusha. Obviously, if Yaakov Emden would agree. But the Magen Avraham, the Mishnah Berurah, would say no. You know, very nice. You can light it as long as you want, but there's no Kiyum Mitzvah.
I have in mind that whatever's left over is left over. It's not that I, you know, that's
right. So that's exactly our Machlokas here. If after the half an hour, you can go ahead and start using it in a way you couldn't during that half an hour. We'll get to that in a minute. But first we have to establish, Bruce, if there's any Kedusha, if you like, more than half an hour. So we saw that's a machlokas. If there is any sort of Kedusha in the leftover oil that continues to light after the half an hour, Magen Avraham says no, Rav Yaakov Emden says yes, and there's middle points of view on this as well. Well, assuming there is a Kiyum Mitzvah, if indeed you light for more than half an hour, I want to understand what's the Kiyum Mitzvah. And as usual in these Shiurim, when we get to these issues, we can always deal with it when it comes to any issue, specifically Hilchos Chanukah, or generally to look at it in a more broader sense as to how does this halacha fit into the general halachas of Judaism. Namely, if we go back a step, you saw that the Magen Avraham said no Kedusha. Comes along the Rav Yaakov Emden and says there is, just like Sukkah. Wait a minute, we finished Sukkahs a whole bunch of weeks ago. Am I correct? How come Bruce is bringing a proof from Hilchot Sukkah? Answer, because the whole Torah is one Torah. It runs by its same rules and regulations. So if there's a halacha by Hilchot Sukkah, it makes sense that the same rules and regulations would regulate another kind of mitzvah, another tashmish mitzvah, using halachic language, and that is our menorah. So, therefore, we can look at this issue specifically. Let's learn Hilchos Chanukah, and we'll come to what's behind this machlokas. Or we can look at it generally, and look at it in a general scope of how does halacha work. So let's first start with the specific, and then we'll get to the general. Already mentioned by Tzvi, the Gemara says that you're supposed to light Chanukah candles ad shetichle regel min hashuk. And then the Gemara explains, which shuk? Ad dekalya rigla de tarmudai. Not just any marketplace, but the marketplace in tarmudai. What was special about Tarmudai? Well, the Reef and others explains, Eitzim Yiduim Etzlam V'Nikraim Tarmuda. This was a marketplace to buy logs. Why would people buy logs late at night? Because they need heat in the house. So that would be the thing they would buy. Today we go home to buy milk and pitot for dinner. Then they would buy logs. Without it, they'd be freezing and they also couldn't cook dinner. So these people were the last people out there selling. They can sell till late. It's like the convenience store is open till late. But the shoe store closes at 6 o'clock. And indeed, says the Reef, what does this statement mean? Umitakvin adachar shkia sachama kemo chatzi sha'a ad shemegim lebatayin. So what is the word ad shetichle regel min hashuk? If they would write this today, they would just write half an hour. But in those times, they didn't use clocks the way we use it. They didn't use watches the way we use it. So what did they say? They said, Ad shetichle regel min hashuk is the way of saying half an hour. The Rambam agrees. Not surprisingly, because the Rambam's methodology was usually like the Reef. Ad shetichle regel min hashuk vekama hu zman ze kemo chatzi sha'a. Oh, we'll get to that, Bruce. These people don't say that. Why? Because they probably, I'm going to add my chiddush here, had in mind the Gemara in Menachos. The Gemara in Menachos says you have to take off your tefillin before nightfall. What time around nightfall do you need to take off tefillin? Let's say you're wearing it at mincha and you're davening mincha late into the day. says the Gemara, different points of view. And one of the points of view is Rabbi Yaakov, who says, "Achetichle regel min hashuk." Now, what does that mean in reference to tefillin? It can't mean, well, I need to publicize I'm wearing tefillin. So let me look outside. Is there anyone outside? Oh, no one's outside? Oh, okay, I'll take off my tefillin. You don't have to publicize wearing tefillin. Tefillin is a personal mitzvah for you. It's not a public mitzvah for everyone. What does it mean in context of tefillin? It's just giving you a time. That's the way they spoke in that time. Instead of saying half an hour, instead of saying digital point of view on the clock, they went ahead and said, "Achetichle regel min hashuk," and everyone knew what that meant. Just like at the beginning of Shas, "B'sha'ah she'akohanim nichnasim le'echol b'trumatan." But, says Bruce, that's not what all Rishonim say. The Ritva said, literally, here it means, you have to leave the Chanukah menorah lit until the last possible person is out there. I quote, "Ovechol makom adavar hazeh kefi ma shehu." In every single locale, the time will change based on what's happening outside. So, if you live in a very small town where they close the sidewalks at 6 o'clock, you light your menorah till 6 o'clock. But if you live in a busy street, Dizengoff in Tel Aviv, Manhattan, you're going to have to light the menorah till very late. Once upon a time, the latest people outside were these people buying logs in the Shuk of Tarmudei. Well, today, we have people outside till at least 12 o'clock at night, because people are walking the streets due to electricity. Says the Ritva, today you have to light Hanukkah candles till the last people are on the street. Not last person possible, but most people. What time do people sort of go home and go to sleep? If it's 11 o'clock, 10:30, we'll find a time, but it's definitely not 5:30 in the afternoon. It's definitely not 6 o'clock. Says the Ritva, "Bechol makom hadavar hazeh kefi ma shehu." Wow! That would mean that we have to buy a lot of oil today in order to mekayeh machetichle regel min hashuk. So the first way to understand our machlokas, if there's any kedusha after the half an hour, is to simply explain, when the sages made this mitzvah, did they mean literally until no one's outside because we have to publicize the miracle? Or does it mean, no, a time on the clock, so it makes no difference who's outside? It's a half an hour. Yes, Bruce?
I'm not sure if it means that it's from beginning to end. Maybe that if you know no one's outside till starting at 7 p.m., that's the time to light and let it stay lit till 9 p.m. if people are out till then, as opposed to lighting at 5 when no one's going to see it and trying to get it to stay lit till someone's in the street.
So Bruce has a good point. If you're going to change the end time of lighting, you can probably change the beginning time of lighting. Because if people are on the streets at 6 and 7 o'clock in the evening, then you don't have to light at 5 o'clock in the evening. And by the way, I'm going to get to that at the end of the shiur. Namely, I feel on this issue, we are contradicting ourselves. Namely, if we're going to change the end time, then obviously we have to change the beginning time as well, but I don't see people doing that.
What is the preferable time to light?
Well, we'll get to that. If you say that indeed it means half an hour, then probably the preferable time is to light at Shkia or Tzeit HaKochavim for half an hour, and that's the best time. All the rest is b'di'evet, earlier and later. And by the way, that's Meduyak in the Rambam, who says you're supposed to light at Shkia, not earlier, not later. Those are the words he uses. But if you say no, it's based on when people are outside, then in every single situation, in every century for that matter, let's see when people are outside and we'll decide. So it could very well be lighting at 5, lighting at 6, lighting at 7 makes no difference anymore because people are outside even at those hours. So there is no real preference to light earlier outside of Zrizin Makdimin LeMitzvah. Why put off a mitzvah if you can do it right now? Right? Or mitzvah baliyatcha tachmitzena. But outside of those two things that regulate every mitzvah, there wouldn't be a preference to light dafka, tshkir, or tzeit HaKochavim. So on this issue, I always find it fascinating, and I bring it out here right now, there's a contradiction. People say today, because people are outside, you can light even at 6, you can light even at 7. Then I say, well, how long do you have to light to? Oh, half an hour. Well, if it's only half an hour, then it should be from 5 to 5:30. If it means when people are outside, then it shouldn't just be a half an hour. It should be when people are outside. So that could be the first issue of machlokas here. How do we understand achatichla rega min ashuk? Is it just another way of saying half an hour? Does it literally mean till the last person is outside? But there's a second way of understanding this machlokas, if there's any sort of kedusha to the candles after the half an hour. And that is the following. There's a general, not specific, but general rule called Hidur Mitzvah. There's a basic mitzvah that we have to fulfill. And then, Avi, we can do it in a more mehudar way. And we have many, many examples of this in halacha. Now, generally, it's no big deal. You can do the mitzvah, and then you say, well, add a little to it. You can add a little to it afterwards. So, say you're doing a bris milah, and there's a basic mitzvah of milah that includes the priya, the metzitza, the chituch, and that's it. And then there's what we call tzitzin she'einan me'akvin, cutting off a little more to make it beautiful. Says the Shulchan Aruch, all that is fine during the week, but on Shabbos, where doing a milah is on paper a chilul Shabbos, but we're allowed to do it, obviously, says the Shulchan Aruch, you can do the Hidur Mitzvah on one condition, that your hand is still there. Once you take your hand off, you can't go back, because then it would be chilul Shabbos. Milah is only allowed on Shabbos to do the mitzvah. So if you're continuing to do the mitzvah, you can do it even in the more mehudar way. Take longer. But if you're already finished, you can't go back. Says the Sefer Yerayim, this is a general rule. Sefer Yerayim, one of the Rishonim says, let's say on Rosh Hashanah, I blew my 100 tkiot. Can I continue blowing during the Yontif meal afterwards? So if it was Sunday or Monday, blow all you want. But on Yontif, there's a potential iser. It's called Hashma'at Kol. The Chachamim made a gezeira not to play musical instruments, even non-electric, on Shabbos or Yontif, lest we may fix them. So comes along the Sefer Yerayim and says, on Yontif, if you blow more than you have to, maybe you're violating this gezeira. The answer is, that's only if you finish blowing. But if you're still in shul, and you blew the 100th kiyot, you can continue blowing 101, 102, 103. The ain bezechilu yontov calls man shehu osek the lo piresh minatkiyah. Just like by Brit Milah. As long as you're still doing the Brit Milah, you can do even the more mehudar things you do in a Brit Milah. But once you're finished, you can't go back to it. Okay? Yes, Bruce.
Discussing things that might have changed over time. Not like today, I don't think, you know, people have prepared their musical instruments, assuming they have any, or make drugs, assuming, again, they haven't have done something quite quick, yet we keep those desires in place. You think that that might have been something that would have changed.
That's a totally, totally different shear, Bruce, and that is, how do you eradicate a null or nullify a rabbinic gezerah? Totally different shear. We'll have to deal with it at a separate time, at a different time. Okay? Namely, today, since no one prepares their own medicine, now how come you still can't take medicine on Shabbos lest you grind it? Or no one fixes their own musical instruments. Even the most handy person doesn't. So how come you still can't play a guitar on Shabbos, right? That's a whole separate shear, a very legitimate question, and we'll have to deal with it. But above all, Bruce, you forgot the most important question in that. You know, mainly your musical instrument, you can live without a guitar. And medicine, all right, a little annoying, more than the musical instruments, but there's so many yotzi min haklal, there's so many exceptions to the rule, maybe you can live with that. You didn't give the example, above all.
The umbrella?
The umbrella? There's no gezeira by umbrella. Umbrella might be an iser ohel. There's no gezeira. That's not a good example. No. Give me a better example. Come on, Bruce. Oh, you're looking at me. I don't know. Why, you all have short memories. This shiur is in English. Why is it in English? Because we all came from Chutz La'aretz, either directly or indirectly. Bruce, did I give you the hint? Oh my gosh, Bruce, did you not drink coffee this morning? Second day Yontev! Why do you do a second day Yontev? Oh, because we don't know when the first day was. The message didn't come from Yerushalayim. But we have calendars today! No. We continue. Minag avoteinu biyadeinu. No one gave that. That's not a big example. You can live without your medicine. You have a little headache. Without the guitar, I'm pretty sure you're all right. Second day Yontev. 2 full days of not touching your phone. Even in one shear, you can't get through it without touching your phone. Am I right, Bruce? A little bit. All right. But, you know, within an hour, you have to look who called. Right? Second day Yontev. This is the example. We'll have to give a whole shiur on it. That's not today. Today, that's not the topic. In any case, gentlemen, says the Griz, who is Rav Soloveitchik's uncle, known as the Brisker Rav, who came to Israel during the Shoah, lived in Yerushalayim. He, A, happened to live across from the Edison Theater. Does anyone know where the Edison Theater was? Ah, Tzvi, explain where the Edison Theater, this is like a movie theater. Where did the people put the movie theater? These are geniuses. Only the architects that are geniuses in Yerushalayim can put up this one. Yes, Tzvi, share.
Right on the edge of Geula.
You can't get better than that idiocy. In any case, there used to be movies, late night movies. People used to come out of the movies late at night. The Griz Soloveitchik, Paskind, that Fincy lives across the street. He doesn't want a movie theater there. But quite frankly, people are coming out at 11, 1130 at night. He has to put enough oil in there till the last person comes out of the movie theater. Not bad. This explains the Griz Soloveitchik on another sugya with Hanukkah, that Hiddur Mitzvah is only Shayach, quoting his father, the Beit HaLevi, if indeed it's Be'ikar Maiseh HaMitzvah, Aval Keshe Piresh, Shuvah Hiddur Eino Shayach LaMaaseh HaMitzvah Klal. Says the Griz Soloveitchik, you can only do a Hiddur Mitzvah if you're still doing the Mitzvah. But if you finish doing the Mitzvah, you can't do the Hiddur Mitzvah. Example, if you lit your Hanukkah candles, you made your 2 brachas, or 3 brachas, and you lit 1 candle on the 3rd night. And then you started to sing Aneiru Talalo and Malos Tur, and then, oh my gosh, it's the 3rd night. I forgot to light 2 more candles. Can you go back and light 2 more candles? Says the Griz, no, because you've already finished the mitzvah. The basic mitzvah is 1 candle. But hey, if you lit 1 candle, and you're still holding the lighting candle, Yeshamish, in your hand, you can continue. So I'd like to suggest those that say if you have enough oil in there, let it burn, and it's a mitzvah, are saying that Hiddur mitzvah is shayach even when the basic mitzvah is finished, because it's part of the same oil canister. It's part of the same candle. And therefore, there is a Hiddur mitzvah. But if it was in such a situation where the 30 minutes is over, and you want to light it again, then everyone would agree there's no Hiddur mitzvah. The only machlokas is, if it's the same candle, just like by the Mila, and just like by Tkiat Shofar, once you finished, if you're still doing the mitzvah, is there a continuation? So we can look at this specific, what does Achetichle Regel Min Ashuk mean? Or we can look at it in general, is there a Hiddur mitzvah even when the basic mitzvah is finished? I'd like to suggest that we have to be open to hearing the voice of God in every situation. And Baruch Hashem, we have electricity and people are out there on the street. And I find it almost uncanny that yet when it comes to Hanukkah, 30 minutes. Now, we saw the points of view that say that. And if you paskin that way, I understand it. But if you do suggest that there is Kedusha to the candles, even above and beyond the 30 minutes, then I'm not sure why people don't say, talking about rabbis that are scared to say something, you have to put more oil than 150 years ago, because people are out about in the streets longer. If there is Kedusha to the candles, then why not? Why not? It seems to be, at least according to the Ritva, against the Reef of the Rambam, but according to the Ritva, it seems to be the way you're supposed to light Hanukkah candles. And here comes my contradiction. Everyone agrees today that if you didn't come home at 5 o'clock, you came home at 5:36, 7, you can light Hanukkah candles with a bracha. Why? Because there's people outside. So how come we could say, oh, if there's people outside, you can still light Hanukkah candles? On the other hand, you know, only put in for half an hour. Maybe if you say if there's people outside, you can still light Hanukkah candles, then with the same breath you have to say, and you should light Hanukkah candles so the people are not outside. Now, I just want to be honest. If there's no Kedusha to the Hanukkah candles after half an hour, forget about what I said. But if there is, I would suggest that maybe in each home, at least one menorah should light longer than the half an hour. At least one. However, only assuming there is Kedusha to the candles above and beyond that half an hour. If there is, I find it to be beautiful that we're in a situation where we have to update this mitzvah because the reality has changed. On that note, I wish you all a very good day. And Be'ezrat Hashem, it should be a beautiful and light-felt Hanukkah. Are we learning next week, Bruce, or Hanukkah's Aser B'Talmud Torah? We're learning. Baruch Hashem, it's not Tisha B'Av, we can learn. All right. So Be'ezrat Hashem, we will see each other next week, where we're going to deal with a real live Shaila that I never thought in the life of me I would see. And I am going to give you the, what we call, spoiler. Person asks me, he's in the army, he has to decide what to do. He can take the morning shift and not daven and say Hallel, nor put on tefillin, because that's the way the shift's going to work. It's a very short day today. Or he can take the night shift. So in the morning he'll daven, but he can't light Hanukkah candles, because he's on a certain part in the army where he doesn't have a home. He's not in a tent. He's out there. So if you have this brera, either light Hanukkah candles or daven and say Hallel in the morning, which trumps which? I thought this was a joke all my life. I heard of these shilas. I got it this week. And we're going to deal with it next week. I call it triage, halachic triage.